Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
All right, Bat fans, welcome back to Beyond the Batcave. I am your co-host, Taylor Jackson.
And I'm Andy Piper. Just wanted to invite you all, if you'd like to follow us on social media, we're on Twitter, at Beyond Batcave. We're also on Facebook, at Beyond the Batcave, the Batman-centric DC movie podcast. Anyway, yeah, let's go ahead and introduce our topic for today, shall we?
We shall. So, today is our first, I guess, semi-formal movie review. More just more reminiscing than reviewing. But we're going to go through one of the first cinematic appearances of Batman. Batman the movie from 1966. I am really excited about this. So let's just dive right in. We're just going to talk about what we liked and kind of some of our favorite things about it and just kind of where its strong points were and maybe some things we would have liked to have seen. So let's start with you, Andy. What did you like about, or just tell us about your experience rewatching Batman 66?
Yeah, let me give my quick overview, I guess. Yeah. I think this movie, it was really great at capturing the time period in which it existed. It's very much a reflection of the era that it existed in, and I found that it's even a really great reflection of Batman from the comics from the 60s, because this is really what you find there when you read old comics about Batman. You find the same kind of dialogue. You want to call Batman or Robin Captain Obvious once in a while, because they're just saying things that you're like, yeah, you didn't really need to say that, man. But anyway, I just found it really charming. It was hysterical. My sides were splitting at a couple of moments that I'm sure we'll get to. But all in all, I really love this movie just because... Well, let me go ahead and read this. I just wanted to read the dedication in the opening credits because I thought it was really telling. It says, "To them and to lovers of adventure, lovers of pure escapism, lovers of unadulterated entertainment, lovers of the ridiculous and the bizarre, to fun lovers everywhere, this picture is respectfully dedicated." And I think that's exactly what we got. We got a lot of adventure, escapism, entertainment, and a lot of ridiculous and bizarre. And I think that's exactly what this movie was trying to be, and that's what it accomplished.
That's great. No, I couldn't agree more. I just thought it was an incredible amount of fun. It's just especially to kind of sit back and relax while you enjoy Batman is an experience that we get too much today. You know, it's pretty intense stuff that we have going on.
And so yeah, true.
I just love the ability to just sit back and enjoy and laugh with Batman. It's not an experience we get too often. But no, I agree. I just think it really owns the style that it's going for and turns it into an art form. It's just really great. It owns its own theatricality. And I just think it's a ton of fun. I like you, just having a good time and laughing at many, many moments, which I'm sure we'll discuss here. But I don't know. I just think it captures some of the best of what I love about that era's Batman and the TV series in general. So, I guess, what are some of your favorite parts, Andy? What did you like when you're talking about those side-splitting moments or just kind of things in general?
Oh, my gosh. Like? Well, just thinking through the movie, like, chronologically, I think the very first thing that made me collapse in laughter was... Well, there's a lot of little moments. Like, the very first one was the instant costume change lever. I just thought that was clever. It pops up throughout the movie. I was watching it with my wife, and she was like, "What? How does that thing work?" But we don't know how it works. It's Batman. He's Batman.
And that's one of the things I love, too, is one thing that's a little different about this film is it's from a completely different era. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's lots of people who grew up with this movie and the TV series, but you and I did not.
Yeah, that's a good thing to point out.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty young, so this was kind of way back in the annals of history for us, and we kind of had to bury it up a little later than kind of maybe some others. But I just love... I don't know. I love so many things. But I love how everything is labeled in the Batcave. And sometimes outside of the Batcave, just things are labeled everywhere.
Yeah.
It's the Batmobile. Like, I think if you look closely on the back of the Batmobile, you can see where it throws nails down and it spews out gas. And there's all sorts of stuff everywhere.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't notice that. Yeah, I think that's an important point you brought up. A lot of Bat fans... or people that are really serious in Batman, they have this movie and this TV series kind of in a position of of reverence in their hearts, maybe you could say, because they grew up watching this or watching the reruns on TV, but I didn't for sure. I don't think you might have grown up watching the reruns, but I didn't start watching this show till a couple of years ago just because it was never part of my era.
Yeah, like I knew it existed, but I never really like got into it. It was just a very different Batman from what I knew Batman to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I grew up mostly around like the animated series. I knew about the Tim Burton films, and then I mean, really got into Batman hardcore a little before like the Nolan films, probably. So that's a very different approach and style to Batman than we're used to. And I think a lot of people that are a little younger may be a little kind of off-put by it and feel like it's like a misrepresentation. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important to point out that this is how Batman was during that time. Comic books, when they started out, it's very different from today in the sense that they were mostly a kid's audience, like a family-friendly audience. Mm-hmm. And while there are some comic books that exist there today for that, I think it's safe to say that comic books a little more generally are a little more mature than they were back then, at least a little bit.
Yeah, so I think when you hear members of the general public talk about this movie who maybe aren't as savvy in arcane bat knowledge as you and I are, they kind of think that this, like you said, it's a misrepresentation or it's bad even. They'll talk about it as if it's just some low quality thing that got thrown together and was on TV in the 60s back when everybody was crazy. But I think when you take a closer look at it, there's a lot here and there's so much good comedy, and this was meant to be a comedy. Nobody thought they were making a hardcore Batman movie and ended up with this.
Yeah, like I think when they were initially pitching the movie, they had two different pitches than the style that it has now. Mm-hmm. And they were both a little more serious, and they just didn't sell very well on those pitches. And so they kind of revamped it. I think the guy, the director, I was looking up yesterday, the director who did the movie and the TV series, before Batman's the animated series, he did Dennis the Menace and Bewitched.
Oh, wow.
The television shows for that. So those are very much comedies, and you can kind of see a little bit of the style there, too.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, I really love the instant costume change lever. That propelled us into an interesting conversation there. One thing that I just think is so great about this is the written dialogue that they have is incredibly clever. And I'll try to remember some parts of it. Like when Robin yells out in the press conference, "Support your police, that's our message." It's like, well said, Robin. In that suave Adam West voice. Everything they say is hysterical. They talk in a lot of alliteration sometimes, if you notice.
It's full of alliteration.
I think that's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's pleasing to the ear.
Oh, man. And we talked about the Riddler a bit last time, but I feel like the Riddler here, just his riddles, I feel like there's two extremes. Either they point out the obvious, or they come to these conclusions that are so far out there that I have no idea how they got there.
The Riddler is getting the job done. It doesn't matter if we understand the riddles.
Totally getting it done.
Robin can solve those things with his eyes closed, hands behind his back.
Oh, man.
Which I guess isn't that much of a... It doesn't really stop you from solving riddles if your eyes are closed or your hands are behind your back. You don't need your hands or your eyes for riddles.
But your ears in your mouth.
Anyway, yeah, those riddles, oh my gosh. Like, that was another part where I was just laughing in disbelief at the conclusions they were leaping to. Like, we were in the ocean, or the sea. Sea for Catwoman! I just couldn't believe it.
A ballpoint banana.
The ballpoint banana. The sparrow with the machine gun.
Oh, man. Just
outlandish stuff, really.
Yeah. So, I guess some of the other things that I like, I didn't think too much of like specific scenes or things that I loved, although it's chock full of them and maybe they'll come up just in conversation. But one thing I love about this Batman, just in general, Adam West, is it's not, I mean, because you could kind of make the argument like with maybe the Nolan films or other things that Batman is very much kind of his gadgets a lot, and he's a lot of his arsenal and like his armor and things like that. But this Batman is Adam West. Like, there's almost nothing hiding who he is under the mask. Like, there's no padding in his costume. It's just, like, it's pretty much spandex and some rubber gloves, you know?
And some finely painted eyebrows.
And very finely painted eyebrows. But I really like that and respect that, too. Like, some of the recent films and shows, even, I feel like kind of underemphasize the detective side of Batman, a little bit. And I just love how much of a detective, you know, this Adam West rendition is. And he's almost a detective first, and then they fight at the end because it comes down to it, you know?
Yeah.
So I really like that, just the whole aspect, that arch, I guess you could say.
Cool. Well, let me point out something else I liked. It seems like this whole movie is kind of encased in this layer of camp and humor, but when you look down through it, you see a lot of really recognizable and iconic things about Batman. One that I really loved was the fact that we got to see like a whole probably 15-20 minutes of Bruce Wayne and Catwoman on a date, which I thought was pretty awesome.
I forgot how long that scene was, too. It was an incredibly long scene.
Robin and Alfred are just trying their best not to eavesdrop. Oh, that was so funny. Oh, yeah, and then I wanted to call this out, too, because I thought it was hilarious. When Catwoman has that little cat transmitter and she's, like, sending Morse code back to the cave, the Morse code is little meowing, like, the sounds that a cat makes.
I thought that was so funny. That's hilarious.
Yeah, there was... Honestly, the meowing made me kind of uncomfortable sometimes. Like, you remember the scene where they're looking up through the periscope in the submarine and Catwoman's, like, looking through those binoculars.
And the one pirate is like, what is going on?
Ridiculous.
Did a good job of making us all uncomfortable, which I think was their intention.
Yeah, probably.
So, oh, there was one more thing too I was going to mention. Oh, yeah, just another scene that I felt I forgot how long it lasted. When they're firing the, what do they call the bat charges at the submarine?
Oh, yeah.
They like get hit like 12 times, and then just like every time, and the reverse laws of physics that kept the dust of the United Nations together.
I think it must have been tied down somehow.
Oh, totally. I think off screen, just to the left, it's just like on a little spool or something.
Oh, that's so funny.
But yeah, I just thought that was funny how long that lasted. I did not want to be in that submarine.
Speaking of that dust, I thought it was cool how Batman was portrayed as having the latest technology in the world. Like, there was nobody else in the world that could separate dust that was in different colors than he could.
Yeah, because you think about it, I mean, something of that world scale, they would say, oh, no, take this to Harvard, you know, they have the best dust separator. But no, like, the President of the United States and the rest of the world is waiting on Batman.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's not hope there, we don't know if there is hope.
Yeah, it's just a different kind of Batman, because the world's turning to him for help. I remember there's that part where, is it Commissioner Gordon that says, Batman and Robin are fully deputized agents of the police force or something?
Oh, yeah.
And I just think it's funny to see Batman and Robin giving a press conference or just walking around in broad daylight. Like, you don't even see them during the night. This whole movie, which is so opposite of what we're used to seeing now.
Yeah, that's true. And just kind of how you mentioned how the law is on their side. You know, we're so used to Batman being, in essence, a vigilante.
Yeah.
And there's one cop that kind of sort of trusts him, you know, like, but no, everybody loves Batman. The first episode of the TV series, he goes into a nightclub and starts dancing, and the bartender says, you'll have the usual, you know, like that sort of thing. So like, everybody's friends with Batman, and I think it's a great feel.
That's really great. So one more thing, I just love seeing Robin on screen. I'm a big fan of Robin, and we just haven't seen enough of him, in my opinion. Like, I'm really, really hoping that we get Robin at some point in the upcoming movies, which I think we will. There's been some groundwork laid for it.
Which Robin do you think we'll get?
At least two of them, I think. I think we'll get Dick Grayson and also Jason Todd. That's my prediction. I hope Tim Drake, because I like him too, but you never know. Three Robins might be pushing it for on screen.
Oh, no, I definitely like the Robin. We don't get enough of him today, and I think he's underappreciated, probably in part because of the series and movie. I think it turns some people off. I mean, I kind of love it.
He's a little ridiculous.
He is a little ridiculous and very naive.
Yeah.
But one of the things, I guess the last thing I'll mention that I really liked too was the sense, kind of talking about those angles of Batman that you get from this film. There's no questioning his, like, moral standing either. I really liked where they're trying to re-separate the dust, and Robin just says, well, couldn't you take this opportunity to just, like, fine-tweak a few things?
Oh my gosh, you know,
you could solve a lot of problems in the United Nations. I don't know how the physics and stuff would work with that, but, you know, it seems like it would be the best thing to do. But there's multiple times in the movie where Batman's like, simply, you don't mess with the laws of nature, and you don't get in the way when you don't need to. and just things like that. I just really like some of like the moral lessons that he has, and the TV series is full of lessons, sometimes directly to Dick Grayson, but you know, I just thought that was great.
Yeah, I think that's another thing that's probably a reflection of the time that Batman was at this point. You know, in the 60s, there were probably a couple opposing mindsets. There were people that just wanted to, you know, make love, not war, the hippie movement and all that. And then there was Batman, who probably is a little bit of the opposite of that. He reflects it a little bit. But yeah, he has this very rigid moral standing. Yeah, you kind of see that from a lot of his demeanor, a lot of the things he says, that he's got old-fashioned morals and values, which I'm a fan of seeing on the screen. I think that's good.
Yeah.
One more thing. I was just full of unchecked envy every time I saw them driving the Batmobile around. Oh, like, that's a great Batmobile. I want that car.
Did you know there were five of them?
There's five of those?
There's five Batmobiles, because that's one of the great things about this series and this movie, was all the effects are real in the sense that, like, there's no CGI. They have to do everything differently. So that's true with the Batmobile as well. So, for example, it has ejector seats. And so they have to have one Batmobile that knows how to do the ejector seats and another one that's more for showcasing.
Wow.
And one for the high-speed chases. And so it was just like, I don't know, I thought that was really cool. And just huge respect for, like, the tech crew 50 years ago. Next month, it'll be 50 years since this movie came out.
Talking about the effects, too, like, that shark that latched onto his knee just probably looked great for the times, but I could not stop laughing at that. And to be honest, that was one of the scenes that I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be that ridiculous or not. Like, I don't know. What do you think?
So, Adam West actually commented on that in their commentary, and they didn't like the sound that it made when he punched the shark, because it's a very fake kind of punching sound. It sounds like
he's punching a piece of rubber.
Yeah, exactly. And so they were going to change the sound, but Adam West said that the shark looks so fake, it doesn't matter what the sound is like. So, I don't know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
You could see him, like, holding the shark up by pinning it to the ladder with his knee, and then just, like, wrapping his foot around and, like, barely kicking it with his other heel. It's just a great scene.
Oh,
the poor animal chanced to swallow a floating mine. Anyway.
So, I thought I would just share kind of the context of how big of a deal this series and movie was, kind of going back to that for a minute. Just some of the things that I found out from the commentaries and just looking them up, just a few little things. First thing I want to mention is I would love, you know, maybe in the afterlife when we're seeing the annals of history, a blooper reel of this movie. Just because I heard from Adam and Bert in their commentaries some of the wonderful fiascos that ensued while trying to film this and the movie. For example, in the first episode of the series, Bert Ward actually ended up in the emergency room four times just shooting the first episode. And
it's because of the nightclub?
Probably, I don't know.
Alcohol poisoning?
So in the scene where they have the bat cycle and they're going to the helicopter,
yes,
the bat cycle breaks in two, so they land on both sides of the helicopter. Apparently, that little sidecar of Robin's did not usually go according to plan. Apparently, there are moments where Bert slash Robin would go off a pier into the water, or into bushes,
or
one time into a chicken coop. Actually, he went into where the chickens lay their eggs.
Yeah, I would love to see footage of that.
I thought that would be great.
It'd be amazing. Batman ejects Robin right off the edge of a pier.
I would love to see that. And then another thing that just kind of gave me some perspective of how big of a deal this series and movie was just when they would shoot the scenes at the docks, like the bomb scene and things like that, they had to take a boat to get off of the docks because there was such a mass amount of people that had flooded the entrance of the docks that were waiting for Adam and Bert that they had to take the back way out. Adam joked that they left by submarine, but I think that's a little, you know, a little too much.
That's pretty awesome.
I thought that was pretty cool.
These guys were the big deal back in the day.
They were huge. I mean, they were going to go on a tour for the release of the movie. They were going to go to 36 theaters, but they could only go to like about 30 or so just because they would get swarmed. And Adam joked that Robin would always get pummeled and it was a football game trying to get out of there and stuff. So, I don't know. I just kind of like that, getting that perspective of how appreciated and loved this was then.
All right. Well, great. Let's go ahead and give some closing thoughts about this movie then. I find it delightful, and let me just share my favorite quote from the movie, because I thought this was just so appropriate for our lives. Of what use is a dream if not a blueprint for courageous action?
Oh, yes.
Wasn't that great?
So great.
Anyway.
That was full of one-liners here.
Yeah, I give this movie like a solid B+, just because it's a total classic, but they probably could have... There's some little flaws in performances here and there, mostly by the villains, that were just kind of off-putting to me.
Yeah, just a little bit. Like, for example, I was thinking about it right before we started recording, it was just, like, the Joker.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really do anything in this one. Like, he's there when you see all the villains, but, like, in all the tricks that they pull, there was
never, launches
like,
the torpedoes.
Yeah, exactly. He does everything for everybody else of the villains. So, I don't know. It was great to have them all there. But their roles weren't always super pronounced.
Yeah, especially. And I think they do get a lot more attention in the actual series.
Oh, definitely.
So I think, yeah, that's probably my thing. And I just think the villains were kind of a trope.
Yeah, and it was meant to be actually like a pilot to the series. And so I think it just got us interested in each of these villains, you know, if you look at it from that perspective. So, yeah, no, I would agree. I would also give it, that was my thought too, was a B+. Especially when you consider what it was trying to accomplish. I definitely couldn't put it any lower than that. But yeah, just such a classic. It's one that you can sit back, relax, and enjoy with the whole family. You know, if you have younger kids that probably aren't ready for The Dark Knight or The Dark Knight Rises, this would definitely be your go-to. And just a fun time. And I love seeing Batman laugh and have a good time.
Yeah, I remember when I was gone at school, I went home to visit my family, and my little sisters had gotten into this show just with their own accord. They found it on TV and started recording all the episodes, and they thought it was super funny, and I hadn't said anything, I swear. Like, they started watching it before I did. But yeah, this is a really great show for the family. As we said, Batman teaches a lot of great lessons to Robin about, like, seatbelt safety, don't violate the laws of nature, that kind of stuff. Anyway, do you have any closing thoughts?
Closing We're about thoughts, wrapped up. I just think it's great. I love going back and watching the series and this movie and just taking it for everything that it tries to be. I just think it's a wonderful art form. It's just its own thing. And you just have to take it kind of separately than the Batman you may know if you were born in the last 30 years. But I think it's a wonderful time. It's hard not to enjoy it.
You know, you say something important there that maybe I'll mention. I think Batman is one of the most versatile characters around, and it's important to realize that there are many, many valid interpretations of him. Just because there's so much source material, pretty much any kind of Batman, we've seen it before. And so it's important to accept and have respect for all these things, because there's lots of people who will just flat out reject new interpretations of a character because it's not the one they grew up with. Like, my poor mother, for example, refuses to see Batman v Superman because she's just too attached to Christian Bale and Christopher Reeve, for that matter. I'm working on it. I'm trying to get her to see it.
Yeah.
So.
No, I definitely agree. And like you kind of started out with, too, you just have to kind of take everything in for the time that it was meant. That's a good reflection on the era and what's going on in the times, too. I mean, you think about the Christian Bale Batman that we have, and even Batman v Superman, just kind of this feeling of what's on the mind of the public today. And for the Christian Bale films, the Nolan films, it's very much kind of he's our hope against terrorism and things like that. It's kind of the Batman that we need. And so I wasn't around in the 60s, so I don't know exactly what all the needs were. I think you pointed out some of them there and what was going on in the minds of the people, but I think especially for that time, it was just great.
Yeah, one thing I did notice that maybe was a reflection of those times was anytime, besides the local police, like Commissioner Gordon, anybody that was supposedly in a big position of authority was just like a total, completely inept at their job. Like the Security Council, they literally never stopped talking, even when they were dehydrated. They them back in and they were still arguing. And then there's the, when they call up the Pentagon, they call on the naval officer is there.
Yeah, looking up the submarine records.
Yeah, they're playing tiddlywinks when Batman calls. And then he sold a surplus submarine to a guy named P.N. Gwynn. So maybe that's a reflection of the public's mindset at that point, but...
That's a very good point. I hadn't really thought of that.
Yeah. Anyway, let's move on from Batman, because, Taylor, there is something just massive happening in the world of comics, and I think we cannot... Yeah, we cannot keep our mouths shut about this. We have to get our input in there. So we're talking about DC Rebirth, which is the Geoff Johns written 80-page one-shot special that just came out a couple weeks ago. But have you had a chance to read this, Taylor?
I have. Yeah, it is. I was amazed at how big it is, too. Just 80 pages.
Oh, man. I love that. Wonderful comics. I love that. That's one of my biggest pet peeves when you're reading a great comic and it runs out after 24 or 26 pages. You're like, dang it, I just want to keep going with the story.
Yeah.
Anyway, what were your thoughts about DC Rebirth?
So... admittedly, I haven't been super up to date on the new 52, and everything like that, but, going into Rebirth, I really liked it. I knew about Flashpoint, read kind of the start of a lot of the new 52 shots, and series, and I thought it was really bold. When I heard Rebirth, I was a little nervous when I just heard the name, because, you know, we just had the new 52 not too long ago, and I was worried it was going to change everything.
Yeah, it definitely sounded like it was going to be something similar to the new 52, but it wasn't, which was incredible.
Yeah, definitely. And so I was glad that it's continuing on as it has been, but just with a little bit of a different element to it. I love the aspect of having... it from an outside perspective, kind of attempting to explain why the new 52 happened, and how it happened. And I really like, I don't know how spoilerish we're getting here.
Oh, let's just go spoilers.
It's been out for a number of weeks. So I really liked having the perspective of Wally West.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that what was ultimately changed about the new 52 in a lot of aspects was that love was taken away.
I think this was a very wise and creative move by Geoff Johns, who incidentally is now in charge of the DC films. I don't know if it's not a separate company, but like whatever that entity inside Warner Brothers Films is called, Geoff Johns is in charge of that. And it's really reassuring to see that he can put out something this creative and this smart right when he's the guy in charge of DC films now. And I just loved how meta it was. Like, it was really this comic commentating on the state of DC Comics for the last 4 or 5 years.
And they did it in a way that totally makes sense. I mean, especially even if you don't read The Flash, if you've been watching The Flash TV series, you know, he was recently in the Speed Force, you know, so you kind of know what he's dealing with a little bit. Obviously, different Flash, but kind of, I don't know, I was familiar enough to, it was very tangible for me.
Yeah, and it really hit home with me for this reason. So Wally West is kind of serving as our tour throughout the DC universe, and he's lost in the Speed Force. And Wally West is actually not present in the New 52. He was written out of the continuity.
Yeah.
And so it's cool to see him back, and you realize that something's wrong, because he's lost in there, and he's talking about somebody who's stolen like 10 years of their lives, and nobody can remember that it's gone. And he shows up to all these characters and starts mentioning, like, the core of them, what made them who they were, and how now some of it's missing. And you realize this is Geoff Johns commenting on like what happened with the new 52 and how something is gone from DC Comics, not just the DC universe within the comics, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, definitely. I really like that, because I feel like it would have been easy to do a new 52 and say Superman doesn't know who he is again, or, you know, Batman hasn't quite got this figured out yet, you know, things like that. But I just love how, kind of like you said, meta it was. It was pretty deep. It wasn't very surface level. You know, that ultimately the things that were taken away from them were their relationships and kind of their trust and their love and things like that. And I just thought that was a little more deeper than I was expecting for something like that.
Yeah, speaking as a Green Arrow fan, I know this is a Batman podcast, so I'm sorry, but it was kind of disorienting to me reading New 52 Green Arrow, and there's just no Black Canary, because that just almost doesn't happen outside of the new 52. And I thought it was cool that Wally shouts that out, like, here's Oliver and Dinah, and they feel some unexplained spark for each other, but they don't know why, and he says that's because it was taken from them. And in reality, it was taken by the creative minds of DC Comics.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway, let's just spoiler it up. They're heavily implying that it was taken by Dr. Manhattan of Watchmen. And that's the end of this book. Batman's digging in the cave after he's read the letter, and he finds the little smiley face badge that the comedian wears, the drop of blood on it.
Uh-huh.
And they're talking about this omnipresent being who's stolen 10 years of their lives. I think there's no doubt that's Dr. Manhattan. I don't know if you agree with that.
No, that was my thought, too. I'm not super well-versed in Watchmen,
yeah.
and I had a hard time seeing them as being connected, so I kind of discounted it at first.
But yeah, they weren't connected at first,
yeah, exactly.
but now they are.
So
maybe.
Yeah, no, that totally made sense to me. Mm-hmm. There's some very iconic images, especially with that smiley face pin. So I'm excited.
Yeah,
this
anyway,
is going to be fun.
Let me just say this about DC Rebirth. It'll make you feel like you're reading those old comics you read when you were a kid again, because it brings back all the great stuff about them. Like, I'm very excited just to see Green Arrow and Black Canary get back together, because I just love that relationship. I love how they act with each other, and it just shows a lot of love and a lot of trust, and I think those are the things that are coming back. We're going to see... It's kind of restoring the core elements of every character that were stripped away by the New 52. And we're not bashing on the New 52. I really liked a lot of the stuff. Like, I love the Scott Snyder run on Batman. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But
anyway. So I guess a question that I have, yeah. just for thought-provoking purposes, are just... Do you think this was their intention the whole time? Or do you think they kind of got some flack with some things about the New 52? And so this is kind of an attempt to clean it up a little bit or make some people happy?
I think this was absolutely not their intention. There's no way they planned this. And if they did, that's great for them. But I think the New 52 probably seemed like an incredible idea at the time. And then they went back and realized, oh, you know what? People aren't really digging this as much as we thought they would. And it's because they did take a lot of... There was a lot of change when the New 52 came around.
Oh, yeah.
Like, everybody is 10 years younger suddenly.
Justice League doesn't know who they are anymore.
Yeah, Tim Drake was, like, never a Robin. Just a lot of stuff that we were very familiar with was suddenly not part of the continuity, and I just found that uncomfortable. Like, Wally West was gone.
Yeah.
Things like that. So I don't think there's any way they could have planned this. I think Geoff Johns just made some serious lemonade out of a lot of lemons, is what happened. So, yeah, that's my thoughts on Rebirth. It's great. Everybody should absolutely read it. It seems like this is going to be a great point to jump into comics if you're not into it yet. I don't think it'll be confusing once it starts up with the number one issues. Rebirth was... You kind of had to have some background knowledge about DC.
A little bit, yeah.
But I think it's a great point to jump onto. So absolutely go out and read it. I'll give this book an A.
I'll do it there, too.
Sweet.
Probably, I don't know, A-. But just because, that's probably because of my own fault, just for not being quite as caught up with some of the Justice League Superman stuff that was going on.
Yeah.
But I still thought it was phenomenal. It was a beautiful piece of work, and I'm excited to see where it goes.
All right. Well, looks like we're about wrapping up for this episode. Thanks for hanging out with us, discussing some Batman 66, or Batman the movie, I should say. A little bit of DC Rebirth. Like I said, you can follow us on social media. Twitter is at Beyond Batcave, and then Facebook is Beyond the Batcave, the Batman-centric DC podcast. You can also email us at thebatcave@beyondthebatcave.com. We'd love to hear your feedback. It's been a couple episodes since we've had anybody comment now. We're just itching to answer your questions. So yeah, this is Andy Piper, and for Taylor Jackson, we're signing off. See ya.